This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
What you pulling me over for, Mr. Officer?
I'll be asking the questions, Leroy.
Man, my name ain't Leroy, man.
All right, Jerome, out of the car.
Man, why I gotta be Jerome, man? Why can't I be Tommy or Filbert or something?
Just put your hands on the hood, Muhammad.
It's the man that you love to hate. Coming out of Washington State. Cops don't like my profile. Cause Mix-a-Lot takes much style. So the man is on my trail. He wanna take Mix to jail. If he does, I make the bail. Cause I know a lot of rich females. I'm shaking them just like this. Keeping that Porsche in fifth. King County, cops don't quit. Even when a young brother's legit. So they follow me wherever I go. I hear him on the radio. With a scanner that I bought from the store. Cause a brother like Mix gotta know. I'm checking them cops with radar. They don't believe I'm a rap star. Cause my brain is up to par. And I'm ready when they follow my car. I know they wanna spray me with mace. Cause my trunk keep pumping much bass. But they best get out of my face. Cause one time's got no case. Give it to me. One time's got no case. The police think I'm moving them keys. They trip cause I clock much D's. They pull a gat and they yell out freeze. I'm whipping out my ID. My gat sits under my seat. The cops throw me out in the street. They found my gun like thieves. Officer Friendly has got a new beat. So I show him my gun permit. I told him I roll legit. Give me a test to see if I'm drinking. They claim my breath was stinking. They had me walk on the line. I walked backwards, stopped on a dime. My female just reclines. Cause she knows I know the time. I'm hip to the cop procedure. They get you every time they see ya. They stop ya, they cuff ya. They roll ya, and they rough ya. They ask what I do for a living. Should this information be given? This is what keeps me driven. Some cops want a brother in prison. So I got me a few attorneys. Just in case a cop wanna burn me. They protect me from the state. Cause one time's got no case. Bring it on down.
Cops don't like me.
One time's got no case.
Cops don't like me.
A cop asked me what's my name and don't lie. And I'm asking officer why. Why you wanna mess with a brother like Mix when you know I'm living legit? The cop said, don't get smart. I tear soul brothers apart. I say, well, take off your gun if you wanna get done, and I'll show you that I ain't the one. The cop rolled up his fist, put the handcuffs on my wrist. Then he threw a straight jab and he missed. A female cop pulls up and she's pissed. But this cop had canine, a soul sister, and yes, she's fine. I said, want to help a brother out of bind? But that badge was going to a mine, so she stuck a billy club in my back. She said, don't think because you're black that I won't beat you, crack. Hit you with the gat, her partner starts to laugh.
Hit him again.
So they took me on down to the jail. BLB came to pay my bail. Then we called Goldstein and Claire. There's my lawyers walking up the stairs to the courtroom dressed in suits. About to give a couple cops the boot. So the female cop takes the stand. Took her oath with the wrong damn hand. My lawyers ate her up like catfish. The other cop pleads the fifth. She lost her job. I seen a few tears on her face. Sorry, baby. One time's got no case. One time's got no case. One time's got no case. Yeah, y'all hate to see a brother get smart out of here, don't ya? I fought with the brain and not the gap. Peace, and I'm out of here.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Another beautiful day here. And just thought I'd play that. And that was recorded in 1992. And I thought I'd share that with you. Some out there in the listening world believe that this African-American men and families have become paranoid in just recent times. But that was done in 1982, so imagine the things that transpired prior to that to prompt this individual to write such a song. And I just thought I would just drop that and let you hear. So, again, the conversation, in my opinion, I think for a person like myself, we want to avoid these discussions because it's painful, and we want to move forward. We want to be part and assimilate and be part of society. But the reality is that we have a little more burden than the average person, and we're not looking for mercy or anything, but just to acknowledge that these things exist. So that's the reason I play that. And besides, it's something you can jam to anyway. So talking about Maui and shortly here and some other things that we were going to be talking about, and which I alluded to last weekend, and I'll give you the greater details. And you may have seen the actual story on KGMB, where we were able to name the names and give more specifics about a piece of property being leased by the DLNR, Dobar, and more than $1,000 a day, it was reported. And anyway, a 30-year lease. But for the time now, I have Marcia. She wants to talk about the Martin Luther King Parade, and we'll give her a couple of minutes here. Good morning, Marcia. How are you?
Good morning. I was listening to the recording.
Mm-hmm.
And no, this is not something new. For as long as there has been a United States, black people have been terrorized by the majority.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't something new.
Yeah.
This is something we've known forever.
Yeah, in the South, we always, when we heard there was going to be a sale on sheets, we got nervous.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas today, you know, it's a little different, you know. But still, yeah, we just have that little mindset, that memory that's planted there. So,
and I am the mother of sons. And, yes, it is real. It is, you know, it's one of those things that you have to tell your sons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most people think, my response is, well, it is a problem. And they say, well, it's nothing to get choked up about. Yes, it is.
Oh, yes, it is.
But anyway, hopefully we one day know that that we can, when there are things, for example, unions nowadays have built this grand protection, this wall of protection and secrecy. We always suspected a blue line in the badge of brotherhoods. But there are other things added to it now where records can't be released. Things happen, and it's personnel records that can't be released. So we really never get the real investigative results and findings. And some of these agencies actually rely on brutality and terrorism to actually, control people.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you were calling about the Martin Luther King Parade.
Yes, and come on, the reason we have a Martin Luther King holiday is because of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. The other civil rights of concerns, lesbian and gays be right to marry, and you be able to marry who you want to, and it's freedom of speech, and right to live across the railroad tracks, or whatever it was that divided communities by race.
Mm-hmm.
Jobs, and so all of those that are listening and sitting back and go, uh-oh, here go those sensitive, thin-skinned black people talking about racism again. I hope that one day you grab hold of that and ingest it and incorporate it in your thoughts that we are all impacted. You may not identify it as that, but we're all any form of discrimination or brutality. And especially if you're targeted because of your sex, your race, your religion, and
mm-hmm.
all.
Yeah, and even women, white women were targeted, you know. You mm-hmm. would think time, and it never occurred to me that they may be, until, you know, I got old enough to see for myself. Now, mm-hmm. you know, anyway, that is the reason that we have a holiday, and so, and locally, to create the holiday, it was all of the other ethnic groups that came together to create the holiday. It was not a black holiday. It was everybody came together. And it was well, you were here, weren't you?
No.
No, you weren't?
Well, what year you mean?
In the 80s.
No, I came late 89.
Oh, okay. Faye Kennedy, Alice Talbot called me. It was in October of 1986. And Alice called me and said that she had just met with Jesse Jackson and the Rainbow Coalition, and we had to have the Martin Luther King holiday in Hawaii. And I said, well, that's a great idea. I said, I can't do it, but I can tell you what you need to do. So, because I was exhausted that particular day. And I called Faye Kennedy, and I said, Faye, Alice told me we need to have a holiday in Hawaii. She said, great. So we created the Friends of the Holiday, Martin Luther King Holiday. And Faye said, if we don't get every ethnic group and make this a true holiday and not a black holiday, it ain't going to work. So she went out to gather every different ethnic group on the original petition to create the holiday. And so it took a while. You know, the legislature didn't cave. They made every excuse why not. But anyway, we finally did. And every year in the parade, in the Unity Rally, and all the things we do, blacks make up 15% of the participants in the parade. That means 85% of the parade is somebody other than. And it is amazing. It is wonderful because everybody there has an issue. You know? They all have an issue.
So the actual parade is going to be
Monday.
Taking place Monday.
The 19th.
The 19th of January.
Yes.
And
it starts at Magic Island at 9 o'clock and goes down Ala Moana Boulevard to Kalakaua and then Kalakaua through Waikiki to Kapi'olani Park. It's exactly 3.5 miles, the full route.
Let me ask you, how is the Martin Luther King parade funded? I mean, is there an organization that accept or receive donations
Coalition.
Well, how can, if there's someone out there like to participate, is there a website? Is there a physical address that they can mail a donation to or contact? Can you give that?
Yep. It's MLK. Well, let me make sure I got it right.
Now, I would think you'd be on top of this, and when they're talking money, you could possibly... You
know. No, I know, I just, you know, it's like...
That would be like asking your name.
I got to be, that's why I'm saying I got to be sure I got it right, because I don't want somebody to say, well, you said, so that's why I want to be sure that I get it right. And anybody that wants to participate in the parade, you're right, can go to the website and download the application, and it is www.mlk-hawaii.com.
Okay.
And everything you need is there.
All righty.
Next, on the 18th, we are having a bell ringing ceremony. We always do that on the Sunday before the holiday. In America, all the bells are rung the morning of the holiday. But, of course, here, when we used to do that, it meant ringing the bells at 5 o'clock in the morning and all that kind of stuff. So we changed to Sunday. And so That's the bell ringing ceremony. Yeah. So we invite people. It's free. They can come on down. The Unity Rally after the parade is at Kapi'olani Park. There's food and soul food and all that kind of good stuff. And lots of hours and hours of entertainment.
Yeah.
So we invite everybody to come and join us.
Hold on one second there. Just read free word, please.
Okay.
Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Hi. At first, your lady speaker got me a little riled, but she finished her statement very good, very honorable.
What do you mean, riled?
Well, okay. I'd just like to say, I'm Howley, born and raised in these islands, and I love these islands. And I can tell you, many times in my lifetime, I've been hassled. So, she did finish her statement saying all races. So.
Well, I'd like to apologize for you, because if you have a need to fragment the reality, no one is dismissing.
I love these islands.
Well, I understand. Let me hold on. I'd like to just share with you. No one is minimizing what you've experienced. The fact is, this is it's about everyone, and you shouldn't be poised to half cocked to go off and misfire because someone make a statement.
Yeah.
It's all inclusive anyway. So hear the whole, and don't carry it as if you've been attacked here and no one care about. We don't appreciate any discrimination because of race, color, creed, or religion, or anything, period. And, you know, you should feel comfortable about that. We're all in this bucket together. And
and so
agree. don't feel that you're being tossed out or singled out or ignored. Your plight is, you know how many women and how many people in Appalachia that are white that have suffered and struggled. You all know how many people look at the Oklahoma, the movement in America when the economy and the depression. I mean, whites were killed just as much as blacks were when they would travel and be beaten. So, you know, no one is dismissing the impacts on anyone, negative impact on anyone. It's just that, and that's the way it is. It's
right.
We're all
my
in
friend.
This.
Great huh? show. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for calling. Aloha.
Carol?
Yeah, go ahead. I mean...
I don't know what I said that sounded like we were dismissing anybody. Like I said, I was very proud of the fact that 85% of the people that participate in the holiday are not black.
Yeah.
And we have as many white people, men and women. Like I said, everybody has an issue.
And
it's not about color, it's about their issue.
Well, we all have to go back to and understand that there's a hierarchy here in America and in Europe and everywhere. And it's beneficial to have all of us doubting and hating one another and tugging at one another and basically rendering these inflictions that they have, of racism that they have provoked. Putting a overseer in the cotton fields that's white, that gentleman, his children were starving just like any other black kids would be. But the system, in order to drive the system, it was done that way. And not, let's look at women, their voting rights. Let's look at women couldn't smoke cigarettes. Something as simple as that. I mean, it's kind of good that they didn't.
Once they did,
something good came out of that. I mean, when we now look at cigarettes, but the reality is, when we stand back and look here in America, the salaries, you want to talk about racism. I mean, I tend not to whine anymore about my basic experience when I learned what a woman, just in general, whether it's white, Chinese, or whatever, Asian, when they go through the process of divorcing and having things divided up, the courts are very, very bad sometimes to them. And their spouses or former spouses get to inflict greater injury.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't about us, it's about all of us. And any form of discrimination, racism, hatred, you know, is just wrong. I mean, I don't know how to minimize it, and I don't care to discuss as to who's getting it. If just one of us is, that's bad enough.
It is, and I have, you know, and I've talked about this on the air before, I have 11 grandchildren, and all 10 out of the 11 are mixed race.
Don't your family have TV?
Yes.
Well, you should give them a television.
Yeah.
11 grandkids, that's an army, a brigade.
Yeah, it is. It is, make no mistake about it. But, so the idea, that what I'm getting at is that they're all mixed.
Uh-huh.
And, but they're all my grandchildren, even though they're mixed.
Uh-huh.
And that in itself presents problems, not for the children, but for their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it is wonderful that we have reached an age that I know that in the cartoon, in the film Madagascar, Chris Rock plays the part of the zebra, and he says, "I don't know if I am black with white stripes or white with black stripes." And so the idea that no one ever said an unkind word about a zebra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that we're, even animals are mixed. We're all mixed up here now.
Yeah.
And so what hurts one hurts us all.
Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Oh, hi, Carol. And I wanted to ask Marcia, I've gone to the Magic Island, you know, where you start the parade before, and you a few years back they had some very inspirational speeches. Local Five was there and all that. Are they still doing that?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. That starts like about 7:30 or so in the morning.
Yeah, the earlier you get there, the better, because they start closing off the streets at 8:30, and the traffic after that is impossible.
Yeah, I guess that's the deal. That wasn't there.
Yeah, so the earlier you get there, the better it is, the more, you know, you can move around. But once they start closing the streets, the traffic is, until noon, the traffic's impossible.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm suggesting that you get there early.
Okay, well, I need to get inspired. So I need to listen to the speeches before the march starts.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad you've been there. Thank you so much.
I've been there often. Every time, but lately I've been getting there a little later before the. Okay, that's why. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, introduce yourself when you get there. I'll be there. So just say hello.
Yeah. I met you. I'm the fellow in the wheelchair.
Well, yeah. I'm glad you're there.
Yeah, you'll see me. I might spot you.
Okay.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, anyway, you know, is the other caller there?
Hello?
Hold on, Marshall. Anyway, you know, while I got you, an interesting thing we don't believe here in Hawaii, for some reason there's a desire not to discuss certain things, and race is one of those.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we wait, and we, for myself, I could take the position, well, if I don't want to offend my friends, because they're really not interested in that. They're not focused on that. But, you know, I'm here to sit and tell you that the police department, I get my house bombed. I get an attack on me to kill me, attempted murder. And they have the documentation to at least do investigation and take some action. And they won't. But they find time to go out and chase his uncle for a damn mailbox. You understand, for taking a mailbox. That's okay, but let's look at something. There's a current case occurring. You may have seen some portion of it on TV. A gentleman who works for the city. He is a city refuse driver. He has had to sue the city before, file legal actions before, and prevailed. They transferred him and settled with him, and then take up their same actions. And here recently, and before I, let me give you the backdrop. The personnel officer that works for the Environmental Services is a registered sex offender who has access to all of their, it's Murakami, John, is it John Murakami? I mean, if you go and pull up the name.
No, that's fine.
But you look at that, and then recently, I'll show you how things work, and some of you may decide to go and listen to the gardening channel or whatever and be okay with me, because facts are facts, the truth is truth. So this young man gets involved, and I don't know if you've seen a city yard. It's like hyenas and sophisticated people and good people, but somehow the management, Tim Hooten, Laurie, I'll think of her last name in a minute, but this thing is, there's corruption, there's theft over time, there's, you name it. And it's just a ball of you know what. And so this young man is put out, now he's already prevailed. Now mind you, there are people that have backed over people and killed them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they still have their jobs. So this young man is African American, and so they attempted to get him the first time. And he's blown the whistle and exposed him on many of things that you see that was in the news. And so they lay in wait for him. So now, apparently, there was an allegation that he threw the stink finger at someone in the yard or something to that. I don't have, but his case was presented just last week on KGMB. But this young man has the job, and so they just recently sent him a letter of termination that he's fired. But prior to that, just recently during the holidays, his supervisor, this young man reports that he observed his supervisors and co-workers in the city yard drinking alcohol. The city, in turn, they told it was not permissible, not allowed, you can't drink alcohol. So the supervisor got in his car and drove, and the young man followed him along the way, and he was weaving and bobbing, and they called the police to report a hazardous driver on the Ever exit. And the police responded, pulled him over, and instead of giving the supervisor a ticket or arresting him or even giving him a breathalyzer or what have you, the police sat and waited for some while until the man's son and daughter-in-law came and drove off. Now, the city was asked by a news reporter, is this legal? And the city says, well, give us some information. So they came back and said, well, oh, the truck, we can't decide whose truck it was. Well, all they have to do is go to HPD and ask the HPD that on their recorded records of every call that goes out, and I have a printout of it, that at 1:03 a call came in to HPD. So it's documented. And the city could go there and confirm all of that, but instead, because apparently they got their sights set on black people. Anything black, and you look, there's maybe 5 or 6 blacks working in the entire city refuge. And so when you see this time and time again, so you see Mr. Caldwell and Carquina is her name, and they all smile. But let me tell you, folks, not only are they corrupt, but they are bigots. And to allow such a thing, and there are other people that have gotten TROs out and has received TROs, and they are still allowed to keep their jobs. So when they set their sights on you, they're going to gun for you and get you.
Gerald, this kind of reminds me. We used to park our car. You know, we were all homeless folks parking our cars by the beach park there in Kailua. And the police would have these raids right in the middle of the night. And they would cite us for human habitation in our cars. Okay, now, this is targeting, targeting enforcement. However, people would have parties in the park with huge coolers of beer and wine and everything. And I even point to the officers. I said, you see those people? They're drinking in the park. See the sign? It says, no alcoholic beverages in the park. And they said, well, those are family gatherings, you know. You can't disturb them, you know. And I said, wait a minute. This is, you're discriminating against us. Yeah. And we are doing nothing but sleeping in our cars because we have no other place to sleep, you know.
But anyway, here's something, an observation, and I'm sure it would be inappropriate and wrong to politicize the Martin Luther King parade. And I'm careful to even speak this publicly and overtly. But what I would say is that the Martin Luther King parade, one has to ask, what does it stand for? And many people have questions. But when you look at the, would it be politicizing if the mayor goes uninvited? Because you see, the mayor has implemented and struggled and charged the hill to write legislation and laws that boggles the mind, the hatred against and the attack on homelessness, the sit, don't sit, the urination, the just driving people to the point where they're being dehumanized, wanting to put them in concentration camp. Is that consistent with Martin Luther King's efforts and what he stood for? And why the hell are we letting him walk down the street and he gets in? I know we can't politicize it, but then where does the people, you know, Marsha, you're here with the NAACP, Martin Luther King. Where do we say to the mayor, you know, I mean, you do things wrong, you do things in this fashion, and then come the Martin Luther King parade, here you are walking and smiling. What message is that?
Okay, you're right. And everybody knows that, for me anyway. Catherine, who is the biggest champion of the homeless, is in the parade with some of the homeless, because I invite them all. And the mayor last year walked with HGEA. He did not walk as the mayor. I don't know at what point we crossed swords, the mayor and me. I don't know that, except that I didn't support him. Anyway, and I was against the rail and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So we barely speak, and I do mean barely. It's civil, let's put it that way. So, like I said, last year he walked with HGEA. He didn't walk as the mayor. And I have not gotten a response from him whether he'll be in the parade or not.
Mm-hmm.
It says schedule allowing, permitting.
Well, I mean, I don't want to suggest that it become politicized, because then that would be...
And what so is the protocol is that you must invite certain people. Yeah. Then it's their choice.
But can it... But then the other shoe that falls is to ask... Well, the Martin Luther King Foundation or the whatever the organization, who speaks out to say, suggest to the because if I was homeless, or just not forget being homeless, or just what I witness now and what I witness this administration doing and the behavior and the corruption and the disrespect for humanity that this mayor has projected on the people, someone need to say to him.
I do. And I testify, I sit at every hearing, I am there, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. No. We don't, pretend like this isn't happening.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not suggesting that everybody that donned on their terrorist suits and then started attacking the mayor, but this is just a bad message that I get, and it is a bad message. He can just beat up on the homeless and do this many things. He impacting this with taxes. You name it. A lot of his policies are just flawed. The rail and other people are being harmed with this financial debacle with the rail, and he's leading the charge. And then here he is; he's the people's man on Martin Luther King's Day.
Well, I have been there. I am, you know, like a bad penny. I keep showing up. There's no question. I do know that I have personally felt hostility from his office about the Martin Luther King holiday. I mean, there's no way they can deny us, but there's a level of hostility that I'm feeling that I hadn't felt before.
And getting the permit,
getting things done, mm-hmm. Yes.
There's a
level of hostility. I can feel it. There's a coldness in the air.
It's a slow process, huh?
And, you know, it all comes together. And you know, and your audience knows, I'm no shrinking violet. But it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. Because I do testify, and, you know, the one sentence I did, I don't even remember when, but I do know a homeless person who was watching, on Olelo. And I said, because this is what the man told me, I said, that this is the state of Aloha and the city is mean. Or something to that effect. But the city is just mean. The way it treats the less than. Mm-hmm. The way it treats these people. And you notice it was just before Christmas that they did a sweep and took all of the things that people had donated to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the city did a sweep and took them all away.
And led by the charge, and also the city council. I didn't want.
No, I didn't. Don't mean to leave them out, because that's where,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I want to make sure that you understand.
Oh no,
As someone said, well, there's not a lot of participants, and maybe we need to revisit. What are some of the factors out there, elements that causes people to be discouraged? I mean, they're getting kicked in the butt all day long for 364 days, and one day they all get, and here's the mayor singing Kumbaya. His presence in a parade, and when we know his aggressive behavior toward the homeless, is something that I equated to Hitlerism. I honestly, for me personally, standing by watching him, I don't know how he sleeps or put his clothes on in the morning to get up to initiate these acts. I mean, he could be a little more softened and approach, but I've never seen anybody so committed to chasing. It reminds me of the little boy who pulled the wings off of the bugs for recreation.
Yeah. I do not understand it at all. The city council appropriates all of this money to the mayor to do housing first, and so what happens?
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of people with new jobs, lots of people with offices and computers and cell phones and all this, but not one house.
Yep.
Not one house.
So when the Martin Luther King...
What are we doing to these people that you come to the city council and you say, I gotta have X number of dollars, they appropriate that much money, and yet not one person is in a house.
Yeah, and this behavior of every year that he gets called and he gets to come down and wave and shake his hands and smile, and there's the mayor. We need to send a strong message that you can't be one day Charlie,
well,
and then go back and cut and carve up on the people. You
okay, since
can't do that.
No, 1994, I think it was. I don't remember now, that the mayor, Jeremy Harris, said that the city would co-sponsor the Martin Luther King parade, the whole event, because, needless to say, we didn't have the money. And he said, well, the city can't give you money. We can't appropriate money for it. But what we can do is be a co-sponsor, and that will facilitate some of these things that you're doing. It makes it easier for you. So, I get a letter this year saying that we are no longer co-sponsors.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
The mayor's administration, Mayor Caldwell, saying that he is no longer...
The city and county is no longer a co-sponsor.
Of the Martin Luther King parade.
Of the holiday.
Of the holiday itself. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's newsworthy.
The parade is separate because the parade is under court order.
Right, by consent. But
right, the court says the city has to do certain things.
And who signed the letter? I mean, there's a formal letter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why hasn't that been put in the news?
Because you're the first time I've talked about it.
Okay, well, could you please send me a copy? Because that's good old Kirk, you know. His entire process is hanging out and getting that rail done, and by hook and crook and cook the books,
mm-hmm.
you know. And in the meantime, and we as innocent bystanders get to wait one day in the year when he gets to redeem himself by marching in the parade with his palaka shirt or whatever you call that tabletop.
That's a palaka.
But again, and it's not an attack. It's just that I see so much, and going back to this young man that is now recently sent a letter that he's being fired. I did an investigation where a supervisor who supervises this individual was stealing government time, and the Ethics Commission ruled. There was a very hefty ruling that this person was to be removed, and that he was found. They found that he was collecting medals and making money on city time. They gave him his job back. So, how is it that you can have people drinking on the property, and then the city goes along and covers for them, but then you get told you threw stink finger at someone, then you're fired? That is just wrong. And no one get prosecuted when they dumped a 3,000 ton of cement in the river up there in Waianae.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No one gets when they buy 8 new trash trucks that they can't use or couldn't use and they were wrong. No one got prosecuted for that. No one got prosecuted. And these are supervisors that supervise this young man that they fired. No one got fired or punished in the city hierarchy for the landfill debacle with the medical waste? No one. And the other millions of dollars in fines that were given out or garnered out to the operator. So when you can have such massive mistakes on the part of the supervisors and all, then one person goes in and flips the finger, that is the allegation or something of that. Then get him for whistleblowing. They also threatened, there was one issue when the trash builds up. They told him that he should not be calling the media. And this is when trash is backed up. Their front loaders were not operating. He filed a complaint to say that, you know, when we had these killings of the people, the women, the one woman was run over and another in Kalihi.
Mm-hmm.
He had concerns because there is a rule that say that if you cannot back a city truck more than 100 feet. Well, they told him, ignore that. And I even got the information, filmed the city trucks backing up, filed a complaint with OSHA and the city. They did nothing. Another rule is that you can't drive along, singular drive a truck alone because of the danger. Well, here
right.
they are.
It is dangerous, yeah.
And yet,
there's a lot of them alone.
All of these things.
And the guy that picks ours up is alone.
Yeah. But imagine you should have a person in the back, outside of the vehicle, waving back. And I've observed on numerous occasions where the trucks go into the condominiums and children are playing, and the man is trying to drive the truck and back it up, which is completely against policy in the HRS. But guess what? They ignored it. So I'm here to tell you that the amount of activity that goes on, the corruption and the hatred and the failures to hire, and there are not many women working and driving refuse trucks either, mind you. So there is a degree of racism that Caldwell need to own up to, and the delving out these punishment. How do you have a sex offender handling everyone's personnel files? You see?
Oh, dear.
You know, and I mean, this is the kind of mentality when we talk about freedom and Martin Luther King and all, and here at DLNR, the sex offender there, that was Randy Hornibrink, still maintains his job. So if you wave at a person and flip them off, that's terroristic threatening and in the workplace. Violence in the workplace, but you can take all the porno you want and of little kids and what have you, and the mayor will tolerate that, and the governor will tolerate that. Maybe that's it. But I wonder what would happen if these sex offenders were black. Well, we'd probably back him or truck over him or something.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't have been there to begin with.
Caller, go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi, Carol. I'm quite shocked. I thought the Housing First program was well on its way. I heard talk, Mr. Kibben was talking about, oh, yeah, we're going to have 100% by the end of the year, you know, by actually the beginning of the year, they're going to have over 100 people in the Housing First program. And so are you saying, Marshall, that they don't have one person in the program yet?
Not that I've heard of, and we heard... They gave a whole list of how many, all these, they spent $40,000.
Right.
I just got that Friday. They spent $40,000 and getting all these things in place, getting the administration in place. But no one, not one person that was at the forum said, hey, we have X number of people in houses. Not one.
What a scam. You know, I'm one of the ones that are on that list I was interviewed for the Housing First program, and it was for the most chronically homeless, and they gave a number about 100, 110 people they would have by, on the way by now. And to be chronically homeless, you had to be in and out of jail. How many times have we been in and out of jail in the last 6 months? How many altercations have you had with police? How many times have you been in the emergency room? Are you alcohol or drug addicted and that kind of thing? Well, you know, even at that point, there are literally over 1,000 folks on this island that would qualify for it, but they only have funding for a little over 100 a year. This year and the next year, the figure was like about $3 million for this program. And by the way, what did the internment camp on Staten Island into that, or is that scrapped?
Well, I don't know. I know that the city doesn't want to give it up, but the people that were on the DLNR board, not the employees, but the board that DLNR had, they objected to using that space for human beings. They said, hey, this is wrong.
Waste and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, they said, this place is not fit for human beings. You know? And it's not. If you've been there, it's not.
Well, the reason it's not fit for human beings is that there's PCBs in the soil and other contaminants, and there's a sewage treatment plant there that occasionally spills, and you just name it. It's wrong. And so Caldwell, I expect to see him in the parade this week, and we're doing a disservice to the whole effort, and I don't expect anybody to tell him he can't participate. But someone needs to remind Caldwell that you can't be part of our crew behaving as you do. We're not condoning that. Put a sign. We're not endorsing this man's policies. Walk, a banner should be following him. This is the mayor. We're not endorsing his policies. He has a right to participate in the parade, but that's it.
Well,
you know. Something has to happen because we're all pansies, and we see all of these things, and okay, the year comes around, and there's a new parade. Strike up the band. Then the band plays on, and then we go to the pavilion, and we give great speeches, and we play the jazz, and got that good food. And then we all go home and run in our little corners, and then he gets to beat back up on the homeless.
Well,
it is
disturbing, and it is just unreal. And then this was during the campaign season, and one person that was running for office said that the homeless were mentally ill and drug addicts, and I stopped him right in the middle of his speech. Just stop it. When are you going to look at these are real people?
Yeah, well,
these are real people. They are. That is baloney that you are telling the world that they are drug addicts and mentally ill. And if they weren't mentally ill before they had to move on the street, they probably are now, given what you all are doing to them.
Well, anyway, we're down to our last minute. So,
I'm sorry. This was not supposed to turn into this.
No. I was going to be talking about, and it's just that you called up and said you wanted to announce the Martin Luther King Parade, which is the 19th, starts at 9 o'clock. You can assemble at Magic Island.
At 7.
At 7. And,
because, you know, once they start closing streets, you can't get there.
Yeah, but everyone is welcome. So if you're motivated and want to get... I would just encourage you to go down to the pavilion, if nothing else, to Kapi'olani Park. It's good to see people gathering and speaking of caring and what have you. But anyway, guys, we're going to be cutting off here now and come back in the next hour. I have Mr. Al Franzel. We're going to be talking about the downsizing of the military, and Al has some concerns, and we'll talk about that, and we'll see you in the next hour.
Okay. Well, already. Thank you, Carol. Thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. For the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. 524-1080 is in the number, the call for questions. And as I said, I have I'm going to call him Colonel. He's a retired United States Army colonel for 27 years service and served here in Hawaii for 3 times. And he has some interesting insight on downsizing that is being proposed. And he has come in and wanted to share those things. And basically, you probably have read the articles in the paper and what have you. And I reached out to them because I hadn't heard much from the other side, and I have heard so much from the city and the orchestrated, whatever you would...
Propaganda.
Okay, good enough word. But then, welcome aboard,
good morning, Al. Good morning, Carol. Thanks for having me on the show. Aloha.
I told them that you have 27 years. Just a little bit about yourself, your background, and what are you looking at here?
Well, I was lucky to have been assigned to Hawaii 3 times. And so I've deployed from Hawaii. I've been assigned here. And my first assignment here was even as a combat soldier. So But my last assignment was at the U.S. Army War College as faculty for one of the departments that studies Army force structuring and strategy. And I just found it amazing that, I'm living here now for 12 years, and then this issue comes up that basically is within my kuleana.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt a calling to get involved in this. And what it is the militaries have been assigned a new national military strategy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been downsized from two major theater wars and a small-scale contingency to about half of that now that the military is posed to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, one major theater war and one small-scale contingency. So their mission has drastically changed. And as a result, the Army has been directed, not negotiable, not up for debate, but they've been directed to cut 100,000 active duty personnel. If sequestration kicks in FY16, they've been told, you must cut to 130,000 personnel. So what they have on the table right now is they must cut 100,000 personnel across 19 states is where they've identified those installations and bases that they're going to have to downsize in. And Hawaii is one of them. And that's... And, Hawaii was actually on a previous list before this national military strategy change. They were on the list, and it was announced 2 years ago that they could be vulnerable to lose 8,000. But what changed, the game changer in June when the environmental assessment for this downsizing was announced, was Schofield Barracks is identified to lose 16,000 soldiers and Fort Shafter 3,800 soldiers. It's 19,800 soldiers. That's a huge game changer, because what that does, Carol, is if the Army lost 19,800 soldiers on Oahu, there is no need, there is no justification for the Army to retain Schofield Barracks and Wheeler Army Airfield. So I'm looking, I say, my God, this is a game changer, because if the Army was smart enough to downsize here on Oahu, and it makes sense, and I'll explain that, why it makes sense, the state of Hawaii would acquire billions and billions of resources.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of Hawaii, us taxpayers, wouldn't be subsidizing the Army's stationing here. We subsidize it in two ways. One, with our federal income tax that we pay just to maintain a strong military, which I support. But the other is we pay state taxes that pays for services that the Army gets that they don't contribute to, and we can talk more about that. But so we have why does Al Frenzel think the Army on Hawaii shouldn't be here, when a lot of the common wisdom there, or the in the box thinking, is they're necessary for Hawaii? Well, first of all, I think there should be three criteria on what the Army uses to decide which installations in the 19 states should be cut. The first of which is, can the force deploy easily? Are there airfields, railheads, and seaports readily available?
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, are there assets there to move those soldiers and their equipment? So for instance, in Hawaii, there aren't cargo aircraft. There aren't cargo ships. All that has to come from the continental United States, and it takes days and weeks to ramp that up. So we can deploy a force from the West Coast. We can deploy a force from the United States anywhere in the Pacific faster than we can get them out of Schofield Barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Then the second criteria would be, wherever the forces are trained, they should stay where they can have full-spectrum training facilities. Our soldiers have certain requirements to maintain their combat readiness. So do they have all those ranges and facilities they need? On Oahu, they do not. They cannot do company-level live fire, which is probably the most important skill that our combat units need to.
So most of it, not most, a great bit of it is fragmented. You've got to go to Pohakaloa.
There's a substandard facility there.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there. I've fired there. I think it's an... It is not the quality of live fire that you would want today's modern Army to use.
Mm-hmm.
You want to use facilities that exist on the continental United States. And then the third criteria is you would like these forces that we actually base to be in an economical location. Not in the most expensive location in the United States, but an economical one. If it just cost a little bit more for them to be, you know, be stationed somewhere and they had good training facilities and good deployment, it would make sense to pay the extra money. But here we're paying three times the price to station soldiers here, and we don't even, you know, have the way to deploy them or train them. So this is the best place for the benefit of the Army. This is the best place for them to downsize.
Mm-hmm.
So now let me talk about what the opposition believes. Well, the opposition believes in the status quo, and they're tied into thinking that it's real essential that we can't lose these soldiers because that means jobs, that means money. And in reality, of the $14.7 billion that the Defense Department contributes to Hawaii, the Army is the smallest contributor. They have the most people, but the smallest contributor. And they contribute about $1.3 billion that they spend in Hawaii, but only even the Army and the Chamber of Commerce will admit only 16% of that is spent in the local community. So that's $208 million. And if you go to the Chamber of Commerce website, they'll even admit that out of the $208 million spent in the economy, they get about $9 million in GET. Okay, so now $208 million, that's a pretty good chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
But let me compare it to this. The forces that are identified to potentially be cut on Oahu equals 5.1% of Oahu's population. And you say, well, Al, you only said 19,800 are going to be cut. Well, with their family members and their kids and wives, et cetera, it's 49,200 some odd people potential to be to leave Hawaii. It's 5.1%. That 5.1% of Oahu's population, they're using our roads, they're using our state facilities, they're using parks, they're using the beaches, they're in the traffic, they're using the satellite city hall services, you know, they're getting their vehicles registered, all that, okay? So they're using it, they're just like you and I, you know, an occupant of the island. But yet, if they live on base, they don't pay any property taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, the military doesn't pay any rent. For the, you know,
right. For the property, yep. Schofield Barracks or the
exactly. We get no income from all that acreage. We get no property taxes from all those businesses and housing, people that live on those bases. And we don't have the numbers, but probably 95% of all the soldiers and basically all the military on Oahu do not pay state income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense for them. You know, most of them are not from Hawaii. And even if they were from Hawaii, if they were ever on the mainland, normally the soldiers in their best financial interest will declare residency in a state that doesn't require to pay income taxes. It's just an economic choice that is wise to make. So as a result, though, we have all, you know, 5.1% of the population here on Oahu that isn't contributing to the running of the government.
Uh-huh.
So it costs us, if you look at the budgets for the state and the city and county, we could save $110 million per year just in the city and county budget. We could save $539 million per year in the state budget. That adds up to $649 million. Now, let me give you, for instance, 11,000 Army children go to Hawaii's Department of Education schools. And you'll hear people brag, the federal government brag, even the city and county will say, oh, but the feds, they donate money to the state for the education of those keiki. But they won't tell you that how little it is.
Mm-hmm.
The feds throw in what's called impact aid, $1,550 per head, per student, each year. Okay. Now, do you know any schools on Oahu that operate at $1,500 per head? It really is around 12,000 to 15,000, and we'd pick the lower number of 12,000. That means it costs you and I and the State Department of Education $115 million to educate the Department of Defense's children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a big bill here that we pay as taxpayers. And so we're paying for this legacy force that Dan Inouye put here, you know, for the pork barrel thing, and then you know the analysis wasn't even done to see was it an economic benefit pork barrel program. Well, let's get the strikers here. Well, you know, we need more equipment, we need more building. Okay, that brought a lot of money in, especially the construction.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what? The construction's over. So for all the labor unions out there and folks that were hoping for construction jobs, in the last 20 years, Schofield Barracks has virtually been renovated and rebuilt, and the end of the gravy train on that thing is over.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So that's kind of the background.
Now, there's some. We got two calls. You want to try?
I'd love to take some calls.
We don't want to be distracted here. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question for Al.
Yeah, I would just like to comment on an overview about war. And I'm 57, so in my grandparents' day, conventional wars like were just being dissolved out here. The supplies for conventional war soldiers and that kind of equipment is, I guess you call phasing out, maybe becoming obsolete. The wars that our grandchildren will be fighting will be with geostationary Navy aircraft carriers, which would be spacecraft carriers, and we have to defend against items called hyperglides that are nuclear-tipped weapons in space that, when launched, they come in at Mach 5. So you're going to lose all the conventional accoutrements that support your society here. I'm sorry you can't collect from the federal government for their use of services, but keep going and use lawyers.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
You want me to comment to that?
Yeah,
I think he's right on. And I think the Defense Department agrees. That's why the Army is being cut. They're the conventional base of the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Air Force, Navy, and the Marines are not being cut. The Menini cuts. The Army's taking the lion's share because they are, to some degree, becoming irrelevant. And as far as in Hawaii, they're way irrelevant. But that's why recently the commander at Fort Shafter has started up this, what they call in Pacific Pathways, and you may have read about that
mm-hmm.
in the newspaper. Pacific Pathways are sending small units of soldiers all over the Pacific, hither and thon, to
mm-hmm.
pretend that they're engaging with other countries and doing great, co-training, et cetera, and spending this at a huge bill. Now, they all talk like they've been doing this forever, but they've
mm-hmm.
been doing Pacific Pathways they're starting their third rotation. It's not like they've done this forever. And oh, by the way, the main reason they're doing this, well, first of all, to prove their relevance and that they're meaningful. And I think they're trying. Well, I know they're trying to satisfy, and I think wrongly or inappropriately, President Obama's desire for this Pacific pivot.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody that is in part of the federal government wants to support presidential policy. So what can they do to support the president's pivot to the Asia-Pacific theater? Well, first of all, I've seen no real pivot. It's been invisible. You can have rhetoric and talk, but in fact, rhetoric and talk is diplomatic power. What I'd like to see as far as the Pacific pivot goes is use instruments of power available to the president, including economic, diplomatic, informational. Military is not the power that you want to implement for engagement in the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the Army's, first of all, Pacific Pathways is a placebo to make it look like they're doing something when actually they're just pouring money down the toilet.
Yeah. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question?
Just a couple comments, Carol. Good morning.
Yes, thank you.
Just wanted to get some clarification. I know you had mentioned earlier that one of the main reasons why they could look to cut the Army in Hawaii is because there's no access to airlift or to whaleheads or sea lift. I'm just wondering whether we were misled when the C-17 unit at TICOM was brought in. I thought the main mission of that was to conduct airlift of 25th Infantry forces around the Pacific when called upon. And the second point I wanted to try to get some clarification on is, how is this going to affect the overall readiness of the Army in the Pacific, seeing as how the 25th Infantry has been touted as the ready force that's going to deploy within so many hours notice of a contingency, say, in Korea? How is this going to work in the future if these units are downsized and gotten rid of out of Hawaii? It seems to me we have a readiness issue with that. I'll get your comments off the air. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you, caller.
Okay, let me talk about the C-17s. There are nine C-17s based in Oahu, but all of the C-17s are national assets. So at any one time, you'd be lucky to find any C-17s on the airfield. They're all moving transport, and most of them are always engaged. The Air Force doesn't have enough C-17s and C-5s to barely do their current operations. So to move the 25th by air would require a lot of surging of all the aircraft around the world, and as well as tanker aircraft for in-flight refueling. So a huge amount of workup is required to redirect the C-17s and C-5s throughout the world into the Pacific here to load up. And oh, by the way, one striker brigade requires 300 C-17 flights. Mm-hmm. Just for the equipment.
Just
now.
A brigade.
Just one brigade mm-hmm. for the equipment, not the follow-on logistics and not the personnel. Okay, the Stryker brigade was sold by Shinseki and Inoue as we can deploy this brigade in 96 hours, and the numbers never proved out, and that's if you have a perfect world and all the C-17s are sitting there and ready to go, and you have no maximum airlift on the ground restrictions, etc. So. Nine C-17 aircraft are assigned to HICM because it brings dollars to HICM. It does not contribute to the mobility of the U.S. Army out of the Pacific. And when we talk about the readiness of the 25th, and a lot of the rhetoric about how ready they are, they're on the tip of the spear, they're at the gateway of the Pacific, is what I just said, rhetoric. And we can believe it if we want to, but our enemy don't believe it. They're smarter than that. Readiness of the 25th. Let's just talk combat readiness. Just as a minimum, a company commander needs to qualify on a combined arms live fire exercise once a year with all of his organic assets, and all those that are assigned to him, even include artillery and helicopter support. You need a range for that. You need a range to be able to put all these assets and be able to incorporate them at the same time. Well, there isn't such a range on Oahu, and there really isn't such a range on Pahakaloa. So, for instance, at Makua, that the Army thinks can meet the requirements. Well, it could in World War II.
Right.
But now, so a Stryker commander, Carol, company commander, has 21 Stryker vehicles, and these are combat systems.
Mm-hmm.
He can only put, when he's on the live fire range, five vehicles on the range, and they have to be on the road in static position, sitting out like open targets. They don't maneuver. And so that is that realistic combat? No. And secondly, they can't use the range at night. So the commander can't practice his skills and prove his skills and his soldiers in the most difficult part of the day, which is limited visibility operation. So the readiness of the Army is in Hawaii is pencil whipped. Well, anytime you hear the company the commander up there say that his force is ready, well, you have to ask, well, what does ready mean? Ready that he's saying is more political than it is actually meeting Army Title 10 requirements.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest is retired Army Colonel Al Frenzel, and we're talking about the downsizing. You can call 524-1080 if you have questions or comments for Colonel Frenzel. And you can pick this up at carolcox.com later on podcast. But when we talk about downsizing here, one of the things that's a little catchy phrase that I've noticed anytime things go wrong or go south with the deployments or whatever, they say poor Wahiwa. I've often wondered, they look at Wahiwa as being the poster child, but not understanding that the impacts that other communities when they do leave. So it's a false economy, because while they're flourishing, then just one act to pull the plug. How much does an officer or a soldier gets for BEQ, and how does that impact the renting market or the rental market in Hawaii?
Right. First of all,
on Oahu, at least, I should
right,
say.
Right, Oahu. First of all, you have to realize there's 11,000 Army personnel off base. There's 38,000 on base. There's 11,000 off base. And they get an allowance, a housing allowance that is pretty lucrative. The average soldier off base is usually a Sergeant E5 or higher.
Mm-hmm.
Private only collects a housing allowance. Okay, get this, $1,900 per month. Okay, so you'll mm-hmm. hear the propaganda that, well, they're only getting $1,900 per month. Well, that's a lot for a private E1 who only needs a studio apartment.
Right.
But the reality is most of your younger soldiers, privates through E3 and E4, are on base. They're not allowed to live off base unless mm-hmm. they're married. But so take your average mid-grade NCO or young officer. They're getting about $3,000, $3,200 or so a month mm-hmm. to help pay for their housing. So why... $3,000 to pay for an apartment or a condo or buy a house. So renters know that, and they want to rent to that kind of client because they can jack up the price really high, taking away the affordable housing. So all that works as an inflationary effect.
Mm-hmm.
That's one cost of the housing market. And then if you could factor in, let's say if the Army did downsize in Oahu, well, that would free up about 7,000 homes and about 7,000 barrack spaces, and now add that to the inventory. And
of homes or available housing.
Available housing that the state wouldn't even have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
But on Waihewa, I don't understand the issue with Waihewa. They have the most traffic flowing through their city. When you travel through Waihewa, it's bumper to bumper, gridlock. I wish my business was located on that road or off mm-hmm. California Street, because I'd be doing really well. So, you know, the soldiers don't really frequent Waihewa as alleged. They have soldiers on their bases have more facilities, more recreational facilities, more shopping, more things to do on base than Waihewa has, or even Milwaukee has mm-hmm. for itself. So the people that tend to wind up in Waihewa is curiosity seekers, or they just want a break from getting off base, or more commonly is young soldiers looking to get in trouble.
Right.
You know, they want to do something that may not be legal on base, or maybe they don't want to be seen doing on base. So, you know, if that's the kind of businesses we want to support and stay in business in Waihewa or anywhere on Oahu, well, that's kind of ridiculous.
Now, there are concerns that the city and county of Honolulu and its leaders are deploying or employing certain tactics that are basically some describe as dishonest. What are some of those tactics that you...
Well, first of all, I wish the mayor's office and would have given us, my organization, the Oahu Council for Army Downsizing, a chance to speak to him and at least explain that there are two sides of this coin. They've taken the side of the coin that the Chamber of Commerce has, which is the sky is falling, we're gonna lose. And I think that's a few businessmen like Mattson, for instance, who benefits from all their goods being shipped back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the mayor is in the tank and believes that we can't lose these forces, and they've joined as a co-sponsor with the Chamber of Commerce, which is a private nonprofit organization,
mm-hmm.
and they're sponsoring this Keep Hawaii's Heroes campaign. And so what is the mayor doing? He is allowing city facilities, our satellite city halls, to have advertising and also petition gathering for the Chamber of Commerce's petition. So if you go to, like, the Pearl Ridge Satellite City Hall, and maybe I shouldn't have told the audience to do that. They might go sign. But you'll see a sign that says, poster from the Chamber of Commerce, Save Hawaii's Heroes, blah, you know, with all the propaganda on it, go to window 14. So I went to window 14, and it wasn't occupied, but it had a sign there. It said you could apply for a fireworks permit or you could sign the petition.
Mm-hmm.
So I stood there I was only there for 30 seconds, and someone come up to the window and says, I'd like to see the petition. And there it was beside the desk. She pulls it out. I could have signed it. This is where we're using the city resources. We're using the city employees to be processing the fireworks
mm-hmm.
permit or some
right.
vehicle registration. On this last past Tuesday, I'm a member of the Waianae Coast Neighborhood Board, and we have mayor's rep, all the governmental reps come in and brief their what's going on, and the mayor's rep briefs the propaganda. Oh, by the way, the mayor's got this petition program in conjunction with the Chamber of Commerce. I've brought the petition here. It's in the back of the room. Please sign it if you can support our cause. So, again, this is a paid employee coming to a meeting.
Paid government employee.
Paid city and county
right.
employee. That, oh, by the
conducting way. Private business for a private organization.
Right.
To promote their objection or promote keeping the soldiers here.
Right. So I made a complaint to the Honolulu Ethics Commission, and their staffers gave me an interim reply. I said, no, that's fine. This falls within the city guidelines called it's a project which provides community-wide benefit. Okay, well, community-wide benefit from whose perspective?
Mm-hmm.
I just told you that, you know, $649 million we have to pay out of our pocket to subsidize the Army. And then we have all these resources that we're foregoing if the Army doesn't downsize. I have a number of constituents or friends and family that would like to see those facilities, would like housing prices to go down, and they don't see the community-wide benefit. So did the mayor do a poll? Did he do some voting? Mm-hmm. How did he decide this was community-wide? So I've submitted an official formal complaint to the Ethics Commission, and they'll hear this on the 21st. Frankly, you know, I don't want to make a big deal about their little program here. I just find it so reprehensible that the mayor would do such an ethical violation. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's an ethical issue.
So here's an opportunity. The rainfall would be housing, available housing and available affordable homes. If they do downsize, what kind of contingency? I mean, I know that he's fighting to keep them here. But what if he failed? Has he presented or to the public or to the council any plans that, you know, on the other hand, if they do decide to go ahead, how can we make best of this and utilize these vacant properties and what have you to reduce the homelessness?
Well, I caught you at the end of your last show, and as you said, they want to put the people on Sand Island. So that's the mayor's alternative.
Mm-hmm.
So his alternative is let's put them in a substandard spot. I'm saying we have the facilities of Schofield Barracks and Wheeler Army Airfield. Now, when we're talking not just housing at these facilities, but these are fully functioning cities with infrastructure and all the service facilities that are up, you know, fire stations, gas stations, convenience centers, schools, etc.
Mm-hmm.
All virtually brand new, renovated or brand new. You know, I try to put a dollar value and look at some of the assets up there, and about $100 billion worth of assets that the mayor is thumbing his nose at. So is the state, for that matter.
Right. Here's observations that I have. Is it if they were to downsize, what happens with all of this infrastructure and this available homes, and will they go to the big pocket friends that we see now? At Iroquois Point, Forest City, and many other places, will that be a hunt? Will that get in their hands, or will it get to local programs to make available homes and affordable homes?
That's a tough question. And you're very familiar with the Barbers Point issue, and that's a failure. That whole transition from the Navy to the state was a failure, and it was a failure as a result of the state, the result of the Navy, the result of the people allowing it to happen. In Fort Ord, California, a transition of their 7th Infantry Division occurred in the 90s, and they did it right. They transitioned that, and oh, by the way, the local public said they wouldn't survive that. Now they're flourishing, and it's the best thing that ever happened for them. So we have a model in California to follow that how to downsize and transition these expensive, valuable facilities over properly so the community benefits.
Mm-hmm.
They have a downsizing commission that stood up when the BRAC base realignment and closure procedures were announced, and they still meet to this day. They're still a viable organization because you can't do what you did in Barbara's point and try to transfer this overnight and just here, you handle it, HCDA handle it.
Right.
Let's give it to Hunt, and then we'll
turn
them back.
Let's give it to DHHL, and you got three vampires pulling at one piece of flesh, and nothing's going
to
get done.
What we have to have is a commission of politicians, mm-hmm. services, and community members to manage this from cradle to grave, and that will take about 40 years. Some of the assets will transfer immediately or very quickly, mm-hmm. but when it comes to like range mitigation and turning over where the firing ranges are, that could take 40 years of cleanup. And oh, by the way, that's jobs. But and you started somewhere on this question, and I think it deviated a little.
Well, no problem. One of the things I'm interested in, and maybe the listeners too. Can you identify some of the businesses that would benefit of them staying and who would be promoting the Save Our Heroes? You mentioned Matson. Can you just give us a little list of some of the businesses that stand to benefit if they stay and why?
The fact is there aren't that many that I can think of. Matson is a big one because this is 49,000 people, mm-hmm. 19,800 of them are the primary breadwinners. Mm-hmm. They all ship in cars. They virtually all ship in cars and ship out cars. They virtually all ship in household goods. And, of course, in addition to Matson, there's all the movers and moving companies. And they rotate every 2 or 3 years. So if you do the math on that, that's a bulk of money.
But it's not going back to the community, per se.
No.
It's as has been represented, this money...
No, only the U.S. Army will, and the Chamber of Commerce hasn't argued this point, only 16% of the money that the Army spends allocated to Hawaii get into the community. 16% is kind of really, my opinion, chump change.
Good morning, Carly. You have a comment or question for the Colonel Frenzel?
Yeah, listen, I think the mayor could become a hero if he said, let these folks go because they decide they don't need them here anymore, and we can have the affordable housing we've been looking for all these years, and then there won't be anybody having to be on the sidewalks and that kind of stuff. And he could become a hero, but of course he...
Right. Okay.
Excellent. Let me jump in on that, because that's what I was hoping for back in June when this was announced. Because what I had hoped with organizing this Oahu Council for Army Downsizing, that we could organize and pressure our senators and congressmen, the mayor and the governor to recognize the goodness of this opportunity, and they could have been heroes. And what I suggested to them, and we met with Senator Schatz's office and Senator Hirano's office and pitched this, and we said, what you should be arguing for, don't fight the cuts, because one, you might lose anyways. You don't have any political power, but don't fight the cuts. Instead, take this opportunity to go to the Congress and go to, oh, by the way, President Obama kind of knows us, and say, look, we embrace these cuts. We don't want to fight them. We don't want to delay them. We don't want to cause the expense. Hey, we're going to volunteer for this, but you know what we'd like to have? We'd like to have a $10 billion financial transition package.
Uh-huh.
And right now they could be using their energy to fight for that, but instead they're fighting for a lost cause.
Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, I'd like the Department of Defense to consider in their exit plan that they can completely retrofit, refurbish, and upgrade the power system out here, resupply all the parts and stocks, and any buildings that are left over, that they open up electrical and electronic vocational schools with housing for people to learn how to run this electrical system and then turn it over with a low-cost government loan to the Hawaiian sovereign so they get their first footstep in getting their land back for eating and cultural practices instead of the upcoming Japanification by Ige.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question? Hello. Well, be patient there if you call in.
Let me talk about that. It goes back to the question I didn't finish answering. Is who will benefit? You know, will it be developers, et cetera.
The companies.
That jump in on the facilities at Schofield. How will it be transitioned out? I don't have the exact. No one can predict that. But my opinion is that all those facilities will become available to businesses and the state and the city and county and the people of Oahu. We all will benefit in the long run. Right now, they do us no good.
Now, I'm just reading the bones, and I suspect Senator Schatz already knows that knows that it's the downsizing is going to occur, because I can't imagine this nation deciding things based on the economy, a simple economy. It's on need for protection and for strategies from the Pentagon. I can't believe that our strategies, military strategies and whatever, would be based on what the mayor wants, if it is, and we'll lose every skirmish we have got before we get into them.
Well, they're looking at this as a community-wide effort to convince the Army that and this is why they call it they've co-opted the term Hawaii's Heroes. Is there 3 minutes?
Okay.
But, let's go ahead and take a caller. We can get back into that.
Caller, good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question real quick.
Yeah, good morning, Carol.
Yes.
How you doing there, Al? Sorry I couldn't attend your get-together with Carol. But from the perspective of the majority of us who live here on the island of Oahu, the only downsizing is a no-brainer. The only forces that are delaying this issue of consciously addressing the needs of the people here of Oahu are self-interested parties, primarily the Chamber of Commerce and the Defense Department. The Army knows that it is not capable to meet 21st century needs with an Army that is outdated to meet whatever emergency contingencies they have up ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So one of the benefits of downsizing the Army is to alleviate this problem with Hawaii having the most expensive real estate in the nation. It is a win-win. The prime example that I will address, hopefully, is the transition effect of the Army downsizing at Fort Ord. That right there is an example of how we can move forward with this incredible opportunity that is once in a century. If we blow this, we're going to leave a legacy for our children that will not serve our needs, addressing what we need to sustain ourselves for the future of Hawaii. So, Al, please address how the transition at Fort Ord happened, and also to dispel any negative impact of how some people view this downsizing according to the fiasco of Barbara's Point. I'll hang up.
All right.
I'll be listening.
And we'll keep that question in mind, and I'm going to try to answer these calls right quick. Callers, keep it short, but we'll entertain your calls real quick. Good morning. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Good morning. I'm wondering how much influence...
I lost you there. Are you there? Try call back, and we'll give you front row seat. Hello?
I'm wondering how much influence... The politicians and their staff have because they...
You got cut off again. While you're filling finding the next caller, I wanted to get into our congressmen and representatives because they're key in this decision-making. Tulsi, Captain U.S. Army Reservist Tulsi, who has very little military experience, won't even talk to me on the issue.
Mm-hmm.
We've submitted official requests, and so her mind is made up. Her constituents are for the Army staying. So her vast military experience trumps mine. And
you have 27 years, and she has...
She's been a captain, and she's been
in
the reserve. So about 2 years equivalent, in my personal opinion. But anyways, and Mark Takai, Lieutenant Colonel, Reserve Army, Mark Takai, also won't meet with us, and he's in the tank. He's made up his mind. These two so-called military experts, mm-hmm. none of which have been to any career schools, feel that this is the right thing for their constituents. Maisie Hirano's folks that we met with were courteous and open-minded. Schatz's office was very open-minded, and I think he gets it.
Now, did he disclose to you that I think that his wife is hired by, is employed by one of, I think, Forest City or one of those entities that is in the business of?
Forest City is one of them. I don't know if she works for that, but we met with his chief of staff. Mm-hmm. We didn't meet with him personally, okay. But his chief of staff was Akamai on the issue.
Okay. Caller, go ahead with your comment or question real quick. Hello?
Mr. Cox?
Yes, go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes. Stephen, the Colonel has an excellent format, and I salute him wholeheartedly on behalf of being an ex-Air Force vet and all my associates in the Coast Guard, Marine Corps, and Army. We salute you, excellent liaison with this Colonel. Keep up the excellent work, Mr. Cox.
All right, thank you. Colonel.
Thank you, sir.
Mahalo.
And for the young lady that called in and got disconnected, feel free to call back. We'll give you, you had a question and we got cut off. I can't explain the why. But.
So the mayor and the governor don't have much influence in this decision making as much as our congressmen do. But they've got egg on their face because when the environmental assessment came out, all the communities had an opportunity to submit comments and either in support or in disagreement with the Army's environmental assessment. And all the communities responded. They had till 25 August to submit their responses. The Army Environmental Command received 114,000 responses from these 19 states, mm-hmm. and Hawaii submitted 30 responses. Okay, and I know five of those were pro-downsizing. Okay, so that is the true desire and opinion of the Hawaii people to support the Army on Hawaii. But so mm-hmm. now the Chamber of Commerce says, oh, we got to change that. Let's get Carol Kai and let's get General Wong and let's have this big shindig and get, you know, and start and let's throw some money at this, money that my organization doesn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna try to get 40,000 people to sign. Well, they are nowhere close to their 40,000 because the support isn't there for their agenda, but that's why they're involved, is because when the Army comes here for listening sessions on January 27th and 28th, they want to be able to say, we love you, Army, you can't leave us, and we'll die without you. And they're going to throw pages and pages of these petitions that they've gotten from their strong-armed from people that they work for them, mm-hmm. as well as conned at the satellite city halls, because mm-hmm. how can you not be for Hawaii's heroes?
Right. Let me ask you this. An airline, for example, Hawaiian Airlines, it's one of the few that fly directly and one of the major ones here. But are the airlines supporting the downsizing, or have they spoken, given this stance? Because here's why. Each military person flies here. Each military person might fly back to the mainland. And then each military person has a family that will more than likely visit Hawaii, either mother and father, sisters and brothers that are going to come here. That generates revenue, right?
Absolutely.
Have they chimed in?
Not that I know of, but I would suspect it would have been in Hawaiian Airlines' interests. Probably not the big nationals as much as Hawaiian Airlines, mm-hmm. but nevertheless, because either way, I think the airlines are Akamai enough to know that 130,000 soldiers are going to be cut. They're going to lose that transportation business,
mm-hmm.
And that's a big chunk of the Army's budget for transportation, which is one of the reasons for cutting.
And I didn't understand they did the C-17s. I know for heavy payloads, but a lot of it is transported by a lot of the soldiers to the theater done by private haulers.
Right. Well, via Civil Reserve
right.
Air Fleet contracts. They're kind of like hip pocket contracts.
Right.
Say if we need a bird, and frankly, a lot of the airlines don't participate in that craft
mm-hmm.
program anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, they benefit.
Caller, go ahead with your comment real quick.
Yeah,
you got 5 minutes.
A question. I wonder how much influence the military has on the politicians and their staff members by letting them have special favors, playing golf. I don't know if the Army has a golf course or not, but playing golf on the military golf courses and shopping directly or indirectly in their stores where they don't pay any taxes. And I do know that the Chamber of Commerce is really good at finding jobs for military spouses, which cost our own local people quite a few jobs. I know of several cases of that. That's all.
Thank you, Colin.
I'm going to take that as a rhetorical question. I think she made her point. if we need to drive on.
Yeah, and again, I'm sorry for all the callers that couldn't wait or got disconnected. You have about 2 more minutes for the Colonel, and you're welcome to call back.
Zippy's also got on this bandwagon. So if you go to a Zippy's, they've got the Chamber of Commerce's little thing card there, and you can sign up. I called Zippy's. I said, you're on the wrong side of history on this one.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Were you provided an opportunity to place your petition, name gathering, in the city hall?
No.
Or the satellite city hall?
You know the answer to that, Carol. Absolutely not. They would get the police. They'd arrest me.
So, I mean, that in itself speaks mounds of they're predisposed, and they're going to get the outcome that they want to. But that speaks of their inability to understand the bigger picture, because I cannot believe if our national government builds our military based on this local economy and its needs, then we're going to fail in everything we do as an army, as a force.
Good point. If they're fraudulent on this issue, they're fraudulent on all, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I mean, when we thought we had planes, when you call them up, they are not there, because we gave in to Hawaii and its handful of people when this great infrastructure. Aliamanu or Red Hill, beautiful homes up there. What's going to happen to those? I believe they're in the back rooms. They know that downsizing is going to occur. And I believe right now, as a distraction, they're not letting it out publicly, because they don't want the public involved in saying, we need those homes on the market to create livable spaces and affordable homes. I don't think they want to do that.
I agree. And there's a lot of calcitrant thinking here. They just can't think outside the box.
1 minute, sir. Go ahead with your comment.
Yes, I wanted to ask the Colonel there, why do you think the CG over here at Fort Shafter seems to be arguing against the downsizing, from his remarks that were made this past week at that luncheon that they had at Washington Place, if you're familiar with what he said?
Right, well, his job is to defend his mission. His mission is to support and defend his troops and do what he's been assigned to do. So he has to his party line is to speak how highly and how important he and his mission is. I had hoped that he and General Flynn up at Schofield would take the higher ground on this, and without Senator Inouye longer here to pressure him and twist her arm, I had hoped they would take the higher ground, but they chose not to. The four-star at Vincent Brooks up at
yes.
Shafter, he's got aspirations, I'm sure, for higher-level office. And, I think he looks at this as – I think what motivates him on this is the Pacific pivot aspirations of President Obama.
Mm-hmm. But you're sure that it's going to happen? The downsizing will happen, and it will remove the 19,800?
No. What will happen is 100,000, maybe 130, will leave the Army. That will happen by 2019.
Uh-huh.
Where it will happen won't be announced until about fall of next year.
And there are 18 other states that will be
other.
Impacted.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, caller.
Good job, Colonel.
Thank you.
Well, guys, I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of your calls. The board was still lit up with 3 calls left, and maybe we'll have you again. Now, this isn't going away, and if the callers out there want to talk about this again, send me an email, and we'll do it. How do people contact you and go to your website and your organization?
Yeah, if more information is available at www.oc4ad.com. And really like him to go to that site, because then that'll tell him more about this issue, who's on the cut list, more video presentations on the issue, and information on the listening sessions for January 27th and 28th.
Well, thank you guys for listening. We're down to our last seconds. Again, this is the Carol Cox Show. My guest was Colonel Al Franzel, retired, 27 years, and we were talking about the downsizing. Get this at carolcox.com and podcast. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.